Welcome to the Ranking Revolution podcast, your go-to source for strategies and ideas for SEO, organic growth, content creation, and business. I'm Doug Cunnington. I'm your host. And today we're going to talk to Tim Schmidt. Like many of the interview episodes, we're dividing this into two separate parts. So they're about like 30 minutes apiece or so. And in the first part, we're going to talk about running an agency, working within an agency, founding an agency, and all those details. And then in the second part, we'll talk more about affiliate marketing and teaching people how to run a website, start a website when we kind of have a moving target because Google algorithm updates make it very difficult to have like one blueprint that seems to work long term. It used to be that way, but things have been changing with the March 2024 update. And then if you rewind the clock and you look at the helpful content update of 2023, things changed a lot. And if you back up even more, it really led back to AI and the evolution of the AI tools. So anyway, we're going to talk about all those different things. I'll put a link so you can get to Tim's stuff, of course. And let's just get to the episode right now. Today, I'm hanging out with Tim Schmidt. And Tim is not your average digital marketing expert. He's a seasoned SEO and affiliate marketing mentor operating a successful portfolio of websites under the brand Ice Cold Marketing. And he's been in this for a long time, like 20 years, which kind of blows me away. And we're talking like over 1,000 websites or so. But Tim's passion extends beyond his own ventures. He is also the founder of WebsiteRescue.com, dedicated to helping businesses boost their online revenue through proven strategies. Tim's expertise doesn't stop there. He's been a YouTube influencer, a multi-million dollar Amazon seller, a speaker at digital marketing events, an avid traveler. And most importantly, he's a father. He's raising a son, and he's always in the stands because he has a flexible schedule working for himself. And welcome, Tim. How's it going today?
Doing great, Doug. Thanks for having me.
And with a resume that reads like that, I often wonder why people are talking to me, but I'm glad that you are. So I want to talk about the very beginning, and we'll kind of lay out some signposts so people know where we're going with this. We're kind of going to focus on your agency work and sort of the inside portion of the business. Then we're going to talk about your portfolio of sites and what it's like to try to teach people. And guide them when we have a moving target, often with Google updates, with AI. There's a lot of changes happening, perhaps more rapidly than they did. But I think, Tim, you have a more insight over the 20 years experience that you have than I do. So that's what we're going to get into today. Number one, how did you get into internet marketing and SEO and websites and all that way back in the beginning?
It's actually a really long roundabout story. So I was a senior in college in the year 2000, about 6 weeks into my senior year, I accepted a job. I was always like a tech fanatic and made a lot of money in my dorm and apartment off campus in college selling essay papers before that was even a thing. Selling anything online, just navigating the web, doing good and bad stuff on the internet, you know, growing up in AOL chat rooms and stuff like that. And I just kind of had a knack for digging around the internet. That led to a job offer in Chicago with Accenture. And I accepted that 6 weeks into my senior year. It was, you know, one of the higher paying jobs that was out there in the Midwest and definitely the highest salary I any of my friends got. So I immediately accepted that and wanted to be a tech analyst and go the corporate route, which many people do in the Midwest. So that was in 2000. We all know what happened with the dot-com era after that. So my start date was spring of 01, and due to the economy, it got kicked back. And they kicked it back 6 months, and then it was 18 months, and then it was 2 years. And I wasn't one to just sit at home and wait for them to call me. So they gave me a pretty sizable check to not work for them for a couple of years and kind of lay in the wings and wait for the economy to rebound and have space for me, which was really weird. But instead of sitting around and, you know, being a college kid, which I did for a couple more months, I'll be honest with you, I didn't want to get out of that life. I wasn't ready. I answered an online ad, and I was living in Minneapolis at the time, but it was a sales job for search engines in Miami, Florida. And I literally interviewed over the phone, got hired, and packed my bags and came down. And I was so nervous about the big move and everything. And I signed a 6-month lease, and I never left. I got in the space. I helped build a company from 6 people to 84 in about 18 months. And, you know, due to the growth and the kind of politics that went into that and getting paid a lot and then restructuring, I just decided it was my time to go on my own. So that's the roundabout way of how I got into the wide world of marketing.
I worked at Accenture too.
Did you really?
Yeah. I actually worked for a little while, but yeah, I was like, oh, small world. So, and it sounds like you never actually like were deployed or went to orientation or anything like that.
You know, when they called me back after 18 months or so, it was, they said, hey, we're ready. Come to Chicago and train. And then we'll get you, you know, deployed, like you said, and you'll be the guy that's on the streets for, you know, 4 days a week and traveling somewhere, working with companies. That was what I was signed up to do. I said, I'm good. I said, you know, I'm all sitting here in Florida, I've got a thriving business. I'm not going to close it. And they said, okay, well, unfortunately, you signed that agreement saying that, you know, you owe us 15 grand for the advance we gave you, which was just a bonus, right? A good faith. And I said, all right, that's cool. But I invested that money into a business and it wasn't cool. You did to me. And we went back and forth and I ended up talking to the gentleman who hired me and I told him my story and he said, that's incredible. Why would we ever even ask for that money back? Like, we're proud of you. You didn't sit on your ass and hang out for a while. You did something with it. And if you ever want to work here, just call us back. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'll be good, but thank you.
That's cool.
Literally what happened. So I know you're right. I did never step foot in there. Many people that did and many people that I was friends with are now directors there and they've worked their way up over, you know, the 20 plus years and they're doing great.
Right. Yeah. I only lasted a couple years, but I have a couple friends that stuck around. They hate their job, by the way, but yeah, they're getting paid a lot and I think they enjoy it, but like they definitely don't love it when they still have to go travel almost full time and they have a family at home and all that kind of stuff. Crazy, small world. Well, I know I learned a lot when I worked at Accenture and other consulting companies, which was really helpful. I didn't love it at the time, but I was able to learn from like other mentors. You mentioned something there, that first job, you grew from a small company to a big one. So did you have an opportunity to, you know, build a team, hire, learn management, all that kind of stuff? Can you expand on that a little?
Yeah, it was actually really wild that it's amazing how we got there. So when I came down, the company was called Web Genius and they were one of the only SEO companies out there. And, you know, we had some competition, like more visibility was out there. What are the big agencies? A couple others out of California, but there weren't many people doing SEO. When you'd call people and tell them that you could rank their site higher in a search engine, they were like, I thought that was just luck. You know, like, how do you do that? That actually exists? It was that primitive back then in 01. But when I got there, it was basically a boiler room and all these guys had come from New York City and they were fresh off the Wolf of Wall Street thing and they couldn't trade securities anymore due to that whole fallout. And they just said, hey, it's the Wild West. We can sell internet advertising. And this is the biggest tech boom that we're ever going to see in our lives. So this is what we're doing. Company ended up morphing into something called Beyond ROI. Another gentleman that actually hired me took me with him over there after a month. So I literally moved and was one of the six guys on the phone getting business. And then we moved and started a new firm. And from there, it was weird because, you know, they were like, well, these guys here in Wall Street make millions of dollars selling and we don't know who you are. And you're from Minnesota and you dress different and fresh, you know, out of the cold. We don't know if you're going to be any good. Well, fast forward 4 months later, I was the sales manager. 7 months later, I was the manager of business development. So in addition to having a book of clients, I managed and trained the entire sales staff along the way, learned SEO because I was in the environment every single day. I didn't really want to. But just organically, I was curious. And my tenure there ended because I was really, to be honest with you, sick and tired of calling people like, hey, we grew your website traffic from basically zero to 5,000 a month. And they're like, thank you so much. We're making us so much money. I wanted to be on the other end of that and be the guy at home. I mean, I had a client in California that would surf every day and then check in after and be like, yeah, life's great. We're selling so many products. And I just wanted to be on the other side of that. So I eventually morphed that into affiliate and e-com, which was my whole next 15 years, really. I still do affiliate, but e-com I did until 2022. So it really was a position where I learned so much and then ended up getting the processes down, finding my own context to deliver the back end, and then eventually doing it myself.
Man, there's so much to unpack here, but we only have limited time. So I'm going to skip over about 15 years here and we're going to talk about your agency. And there's a couple topics that we can get into. I'm going to list a couple of them out and we'll see whatever like sort of piques your interest, and then we can dig into that one and kind of go through them. So I'm looking at client acquisition, and you can also describe the agency a little bit too, and like who you're helping and the size of business and all that kind of stuff. But I'm looking at client acquisition, retention, value proposition and differentiation from the services you offer, scaling the business, building the team, and pricing. So those are kind of the broad strokes. And I'll let you think for a second, and you could talk about what websiterescue.com, like who the target market is, so people have an understanding.
Sure. I work with companies in a very wide spectrum, but for me, there's no one I like working with more. And that's the majority of my clients are solo practitioners with a small business who simply don't have a marketing department. And they've gone around and they've tried different PR agencies or marketing firms around town that kind of go the old school way and say they can do internet marketing, but we all know they're limited, you know, and kudos to a lot of them have gotten better over the years, but they just simply aren't in the trenches every single day like we are with their own websites, marketing them. They kind of learn on the fly and test on their clients. And that's not what I do. I like to know absolutely everything they do, where they make their money, back into keyword strategy from there. So a lot of the people I work with are med spas. That's a very big niche for me. But I know that space very well, which I know we're skipping over, but I was in e-com for 13 years and I have an anti-aging skincare brand. So I ended up acquiring a lot of assets that could help people rank, you know, PBNs and authority sites, what have you, that were about aging and skincare. So to me, that was a good fit because I have the portfolio to back that up and build PR, relevancy legs, et cetera, from that. Again, for me, finding someone who has a small business that I can really impact them versus a huge company. And I do have one firm that's global. I just see the impact of what I do so much more. So that's my focus. And a lot of my clients come from referrals. You know, these guys are network. They go to events. They meet guys they compete with that they go out with for drinks after learning the newest medicine. And they're in New York and we're here in Miami, or maybe they're out of Chicago, but they're like, they got a web guy, you know, I can't. So I get a ton of referrals. That's my main business is word of mouth. I do not do any advertising other than, you know, media mentions, paid placements with Parasite and stuff are obviously big, but I don't do any paid ads or anything like that. A lot of it comes from within because it wasn't a focus for a very long time while I had econ running. And to me, I like my portfolio of niche sites too, which I build in the background, and I've never stopped doing that.
Okay. What percentage would you say are the spas of all your clients?
25%. Yeah.
Okay. So I was expecting it could be like 80%. So it really is a wide range. And Right. Okay, that's great with the word of mouth, because people can actually see the results and they're asking about it, or they got such good results that they're sharing it with their friend or peer from, it sounds like another market. So it's not a direct competitor typically.
Right.
Okay. I see how that works, because some people would be a little more protective, but if it's across the country, it's not a huge deal. All right.
The thing is, a lot of these guys and chiropractors are part of that mold as well. You know, they go to these annual meetups and they have to learn the latest tactics and medicines and theories, like I'd said before. And a lot of these guys went to college together and then they set up in different markets. So you have, you know, Dr. Oliviero, who's down in Key West, went to school in Atlanta with a gentleman in New Jersey, and they're friends. And, you know, they became organic friends over the years, were college buddies. They share contacts. I mean, when things work for them, they want their friends to succeed in other markets. So that's a big thing.
Aside from the word of mouth, do you do any other sort of marketing? Maybe even just like speak at those events where you show up as like a marketing expert?
I do show up to those kind of events when I'm able to do that. Networking is pretty big for me. I'm a social person. So, you know, like your network is your net worth is based on your network, you know? So a lot of people know me around town as the guy who can just do cool things on the internet. So I go to a cigar bar here in Fort Lauderdale that has a lot of high net worth people, ex-athletes and stuff, and they all have some sort of business interest. And there's not a day the owner doesn't say, talk to Tim. So I do their marketing. It's a cigar bar. So you can see I'm all over the range. I've got real estate investors, chiros, med spas, adult companies. And, you know, there's really not one thing I'm married to. And I know a lot of people have that whole niche down and be the best at that one niche, but I've got that going in the medical area. But look, if someone's out there and needs help, it's the same strategy, just with a little bit different tweaking and focus and messaging.
And you highlighted it there. You have the right contacts and you're putting yourself out there and people know what you're working on. So if you can get the results in other industries, it's a no-brainer. Like you put in the time also. Like we can't ignore the couple decades of experience you have. Okay. So let's talk about retaining clients. We talked about acquiring them. So once they're on board and they're hopefully getting great results, how do you keep them around? Because I know there's sometimes a perception that once you're getting the traffic, okay, these guys did their work, we can get rid of the marketing agency and we should be fine. So how do you keep folks around?
To me, transparency is number one. That and just keeping your eye on new trends and evolving. Like right now, I'm doing a lot of YouTube stuff for myself and my clients as well. But going back to the first tidbit, transparency is huge. I've had a very large global adult company for going on 10 years. And they know firsthand, they've been doing it. You know, they worked with people 10 years before they hired me. And they understand that we're going to hit updates, we're going to hit turbulence, and we're going to have fantastic months, and there's months it goes down. So when you have a client like that that understands that, it's just literally updating them. Hey, there was a massive update. We're looking into what to do. We lost 60% of traffic. You just got to be transparent with them and say, this is a game. We're always playing the game. And I've seen it. I mean, when I started, we didn't know what Google was. We knew what it was, but it wasn't anything. We were based our full SEO campaign on Yahoo and Yahoo directory. And those were really fun times. It was super easy and that's all anyone wanted. But now you got to look out for other things. I mean, DuckDuckGo is growing. So I think it's being transparent with what's going on, updating them instead of hiding when there's bad news. You know, they'd rather hear it from you that, hey, we're down, just stick with me, we're going to figure it out, and being transparent and letting them know rather than one day they wake up and they look at their traffic and like, whoa, what happened? Well, where's my web guy? You know, he's hiding. No, you want to be transparent about that stuff. So for me, retention is being honest about everything. And not only that, trying to make it up with something else. So we've added parasite SEO to the mix the last couple of years when things aren't amazing. And those are high placements and they cut into margins, like really extreme. I mean, some of these placements go for a few thousand dollars, but they can get instant results when they work. So just supplementing that and finding out that or creating something on YouTube that could lead to them as well is also a big thing.
Part of the transparency is an education process. So do you have any, I guess, criteria for clients that you will work with? Maybe if, and I'll explain it just directly, if someone doesn't know much about SEO and they hear you say that and they're like, I don't know if I want to work with that guy because it sounds like it's more turbulent when this other, maybe less competent SEO agency is saying, hey, we're going to take care of everything. We'll get you on page one. Don't worry about anything at all. And they don't have the transparency. So how do you judge whether you want to work with a client or not based on how much you're going to have to educate them?
That's a really good question. And it's something that we deal with constantly in this industry. There's a lot of people that want instant results. And there's, you know, some pretty underhanded people that promise that kind of stuff. And I always tell them, look, I'm not going to promise you anything. I'm going to tell you that based on your space, and this is a range, it's not typical, but it can happen. Just plan on investing in this for 6 to 9 months before you see anything dramatic. Now, I could show you something awesome in month three, but to me, I keep that in my back pocket. Like, let me surprise you with that and say, hey, we're trending above pace. That's just a really good thing. I'd be honest with them that an overnight game, it's a long-term game. Once you get off the ride, things can start slowing down. Once you stop building backlinks and stop looking at your tech, things can happen. So I'm really transparent with them. If they don't understand that, I just tell them it's not a good fit because the headaches and the people that do not understand that and need that handholding all the time take away from you being able to deliver for your other clients. So I'm pretty selective and probably turn down people that a lot of people wouldn't turn down. But again, I want to make sure they understand it and know what they're getting into because it's not 2012 anymore. You know, things matter like anchor text diversity and where you're getting your signals from. You can't just pop things up and go on Black Hat World and buy links and you already expect miracles. That just not works right now.
It sounds like you go with sort of a gut feel on how the conversation is going. Is that right?
Yeah. And I also engage people and ask a lot of questions. Have you ever worked with anyone in SEO before? What are the results? What did they do? And I learned from that. I mean, again, when you're selling, you want to be listening and asking questions. You don't want to be selling and just slamming information down their throat. So more consultative than anything. And if they don't have good feedback based on that, or they give you like, well, I don't know, give me a proposal. It's not a good fit. Like they're not really quite ready. They need to have their pain points, understand. And if they haven't done any of it before, obviously there's more of an education process, explaining, okay, you have a brand new domain. You registered it last month. You're behind the eight ball, right? You don't have any social setup. We're starting at absolute ground zero. You're going to be on a 12 to 16 month runway to even get anything significant authority wise, unless you're in a really easy market. So you just got to be really honest with them. And I think you hit it really on the head with the gut feeling. There's a lot of people out there, you know, right away, whether they understand and they're willing to let you guide them for 6 to 9 months or whatever, however long it takes to great gain that traction. And there's some people that are like, you know, they're going to judge you after month two, be like, this is a waste. And you know, for me, I invest a lot of the first few months money right up front and don't really take profit till later because I want to get that thing going. I invest a lot of the budget in that, even if it means nothing for myself, because I think you have to hit the ground running. And some people need a lot more help than others, and you need that budget to go ahead and build everything you need.
And I can speak from experience. I don't work with clients now, but there was a small period of time where I would take a client, even if I had that sort of unsure feeling, always a huge headache. They're the most demanding folks typically. And I knew it like when we were having the initial call, but I was like, maybe it'll work out. It never works out. It never works out. Do you have a story like that as well?
Yeah, I do. I had a gentleman that I met at a conference, and he was gung-ho about growing his business. And in 3 to 4 months, which was, I mean, again, this was 8, 9 years ago. So we both know SEO is easier back then. Every year it gets harder. 3, 4 months, we get him on page one, not number one, but like number 3 or 5. And he was getting great traffic. And he said, hey, thank you so much. You've done wonderful. Everything's amazing, but I'm going to cancel now because I'm where I need to be. I'm going to pause it for a while. And if we, you know, fall off page one, I'll call you back. And I literally had a quote that I was sharing this client with a partner of mine who kind of did some back end stuff for me. And he laughed at the email and I replied with, and it said, it's not Nintendo. You don't hit pause and come back to it later. You need to constantly be doing this stuff because once you turn the game off, you have to start over. I think I gave him a Nintendo analogy. And my friend's like, that was one of the funniest things I've ever heard, but it's true. He was so happy for 3 months. And initially I kind of got that vibe from him that he was looking to make some fast money. And he was in an industry where the leads were worth a lot to him. And then once he got a couple of big ones, his life kind of changed a little bit. And I think that's probably why he paused. But I got that feeling, I got that email. Hey, thank you so much. You've been amazing, but we're done. And I was like, wow, I've never got that one before.
So go with your gut feeling, folks. You're probably right. People don't magically all of a sudden like change their vibe. So, okay, very good. Let's move on to something that I think was kind of in the subtext of what you mentioned before and sort of like lifetime value. How long do you expect to have someone as a client? Do you have an actual like lifetime value calculated, an estimate, that sort of thing?
I've never really looked at that because for many years, client wasn't a focus. I had the e-com biz from 09 to, it was kind of started actually in 08 conceptualized and a lot of work went into it, to 22. And on that point, I only worked with select people that were word of mouth. So I'm only going back a few years. After I exited in 2022, I had to stay on and consult for a while. And then I really, last year, opened back up to taking new clients. But not really. But I mean, I've had some that are with me since 11 that are still there. And I haven't raised the rates for inflation, which I probably should do. But they're there. So it's different in every industry. I mean, there's people where if you build a lot of value and you're indispensable. I mean, I have one med spa that's been with me since 11, and literally I've provided so much value. She doesn't know how to even put a new post on her site. She's like, hey, we have this new service we're offering. Can you take all this text, make it look good and put it on a site? And I'm kept around for things like that, that are really lenial and tedious, but again, like I'm indispensable and the campaign does so well that not a lot of work at this point goes in. Obviously keep your eye on it and keep building length. You always want to be better. But it's one of those things that we've peaked in a very small market and we're doing very well and we're almost, you know, untouchable in that space. So keeping the value by doing little things for that can go a long way to retention. As far as lifetime value, I mean, people come and go, trends come and go. I've had people that were in spaces that I knew were kind of gray area. Like I had a big crypto client in 2018 and they had this newsletter and they just wanted to put up content links and get it to the top and become an authority newsletter. And then when the market kind of tanked, they were like, hey, we're done. And I kind of knew that going in and I priced that in accordingly, but that kind of stuff happened.
Okay. And you had the exit from the e-com business in 2022, you mentioned. I assume that was pretty successful, and I'm going to go in a very roundabout way to ask this question. So it sounds like you're not worrying too much about the lifetime value. It sounds like you're maybe doing this for fun. You had a big exit, I take it. So like, you don't have to be in the weeds thinking, how can I squeeze the efficiency out of this business? Is that accurate?
That's true. And also that in the background, I have my portfolio of niche sites too, which those I can, you know, flip and scale a flip, which is a big thing for me. Selling an agency is very hard. And I know that's going to be like your sole focus. Like, you're building an agency with ironclad contracts, long-term value, and you can sell the agency. That's never been a thing I've wanted to do because I'm so personal with my clients. And again, just kind of like working on a referral basis. I think that even if I sold the agency, if I wasn't involved in it, they wouldn't want to continue because I've built these long-lasting relationships. A lot of times it's like working with a real estate agent or someone to that nature where you feel so comfortable with them that they sold their business. Like, hey, there's a new guy in town. He's going to show you the house, like the next house to invest in. It doesn't feel the same. So that's never really been my strategy. And I have, you know, like you said, an exit, and then my portfolio of sites are like my bread and butter. So it's kind of a thing that I do, I don't want to say for sport, but I like helping businesses, and I hate saying no to people that I know I could do really well for. So I make extra time to do the client SEO, even though it's not my favorite thing to do. My favorite thing to do is build affiliate.
Okay, which we will transition into in just a second. It's great to hear that because I know some of the podcasts I listen to and other content that I consume, there's a huge focus on just like growth and hustle culture in air quotes. And that's not my approach. I'm a lot more lifestyle focused, I guess. And there's a bunch of lifestyle focused people as well where my time is the most valuable thing. I don't have to do all the stuff that I'm doing, but I find the things that I am working on pretty fun. And I think, Tim, it sounds like you have the same thing. You're like, I have this skill. You like solving the problems. You like helping people that need to outsource it because they got to focus on their main business and not get stuck in the weeds of SEO and trying to keep up with essentially a full-time job. So before we switch to the affiliate marketing niche sites, let's talk about pricing. Can you explain your approach to pricing, knowing that it's kind of a fun business and that sometimes people come and go, like the crypto client that you mentioned, and you price that in. So what's your overall approach to pricing a long-term gig?
I've always gone with the kind of fact that no two jobs are the same, right? Unless you're talking about the same exact market. And tell people this on the phone all the time. You want to rank for a criminal defense attorney, in New York City? That's going to be one price. If you want to rank for it in Dubuque, Iowa, that's another price. You know, it's just, we're talking about all the people in the populace of New York City versus a very small town in, you know, Iowa. Your competition is going to be different. There's way too many factors that are different. There might be two or three really good SEO managed campaigns going out of Dubuque. I don't know. I haven't looked at it. But when you look at that, you have to take into consideration the market, the demographic of the market, the need for the service in the market. So I could give you a shining example. The activities going on in med spas, whether it's a Botox procedure or a Brazilian butt lift, they're absolutely massive down right, in Miami, Fort Lauderdale area. It doesn't happen in the Midwest so much. People aren't as in vogue. They aren't as vague. The vanity thing isn't there. I'm not saying there are people that do it, but the demand is absolutely massive down here. Just the culture that we're in. Other markets is different. So here, prices may be a lot higher. Up there, they might be slower. So you have to look at what the customer can also make on their back end. If there's a guy who tells you he has $500 a month to rank a site and he's selling a service, you know, like a nose job that's going to start at $8,000, you got to look at him and say, sorry, like, you know, this isn't going to happen. It's a competitive space. You're doing these huge luxury procedures that people are investing several thousand dollars in your budget. It's nothing. I mean, you get one customer. You probably profited your whole year. Your whole campaign is free for the year at that point. You just have to look at their margins too. So again, competition is number one for me, but very hard to price in a campaign. I mean, there's people I've turned away because they're selling $12 trinkets that might be the coolest little, you know, water bottle you can travel with in your golf bag ever. But for a couple of $1,000s a month, you need to sell a lot of those and then make sure you resell those. That's a product to me that people would buy once, maybe twice if they lose it or break it. But you have to look at lifetime value of customers as well. So in the adult world, which a lot of it's subscription-based and dating as well, that's a very, very hard customer to get because the back end is so good for them. When you got people paying $39 a month to be on a dating site and they stay on for years and they're on multiple of them, that's a pretty big thing.
Thanks a lot to Tim. That concludes part one, of course. Part two is coming up in the next episode. So if you want to hear what comes next, be sure to check that one out. If you do have a second, hop over to, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and leave a review. It helps a lot if you subscribe to the show and download all the episodes. You might notice if you are following along from the beginning, which I appreciate you if you do. I'm launching with quite a few episodes, so it really does help when you download those episodes and leave a review. Hopefully it's positive, but I love honest feedback. And if you happen to be watching over on the YouTube side, you can subscribe, leave comments on all the videos, have little conversations there. I really appreciate any kind of support and interaction you can provide.